Good morning. If you could take your seats. I'm Daniel Benjamin. I'm the director of the Center on the U.S. and Europe, and I'm delighted to welcome you today to Brookings. One of the themes that has certainly run through the post-Cold War period from the Balkans in the last decade, and especially in Southwest and Central Asia, and this one is the extraordinary difficulty that we in the international community have had with complex contingencies and the profound challenges of post-conflict reconstruction. The problems have been nowhere more apparent than in Afghanistan, a country ravaged by decades of civil war and unimaginable misrule. As I hope everyone agrees, the stakes in Afghanistan are enormously high for the sake of regional stability, global security, and the fundamental human needs of a population that has suffered far, far too much. And it's for that reason that I am pleased that we are joined today by Afghanistan's Minister of the Interior, Mohammad Hanif Atmar. In a period of great frustration and struggle, Minister Atmar has had a rare and consistent record of achievement and great integrity. He has demonstrated this during his tenure at the Ministry of Rural Rehabilitation and the Ministry of Education. With a background as a scholar and considerable expertise as a practitioner, Mohammad Hanif Atmar has shown that he understands how to work with the international community and government colleagues, and also knows how to deliver services on the ground outside Kabul. He's been one of the few ministers to serve in successive Karzai governments and to enjoy wide support in the National Assembly in Afghanistan. Since taking over the ministry in October, he has shown a seriousness and resolve and a keen understanding for the need for rapid action in creating an effective Afghan police force, in rooting out corruption, and in promoting good governance. It's hard to think of many jobs in the world that are tougher or any undertakings more deserving of the clear and dedicated support of the international community than the one Minister Atmar is engaged in. So we're honored that he has chosen to join us here today. I want to welcome him. I also want to welcome Ambassador Jawad. And Minister Atmar, the podium is yours.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Good morning, colleagues, ladies and gentlemen. First of all, Mr. Benjamin, thank you very much for inviting me. It's such an honor to be here and to speak to such a distinguished audience. A second thank you for the fact that I have an opportunity now to meet some of my very old and nice friends, particularly Ambassador Newman. I'm so delighted to see you. When I was told that I was going to be speaking here, and I thought, oh my God, what do they want me to speak? I haven't yet actually reached the 100th day in my office. I'm trying to do that. But before I actually talk about the things I wanted to talk about, let me take this opportunity to pay my respect to all the brave men and women in uniform from the United States who are serving in our country with dedication and with a very high level of commitment to the people of Afghanistan. In particular, I would like to pay my respect to the four colleagues who were killed yesterday by an IED, together with my policemen. My prayers go to their families. Every day, every Afghan is thinking of them. The fact that our children are able to go to school, the fact that our communities are protected against the most inhuman forces of terrorism, provide Afghans with a reason to be grateful to all these brave Americans and other soldiers of the international community. I'm also thankful for the fact that the United States has been particularly professionally with me over the past 7 years. that I served in different capacities as Minister of Rural Development, Minister of Education, and now as Minister of Interior. I have been honored to have this partnership with my U.S. colleagues. The things that I wanted to talk about, just to give you a flavor of what challenges the police is supposed to address in Afghanistan. And the challenges that are internal to the police for its new leadership to address in order to enable the police to tackle the challenges that the nation is faced with. I will be talking about three major challenges that the nation is faced with, and about 10 challenges internal to the police, and then proposing 7 major strategies as to how to tackle them. And then hopefully that will provide basis for our discussion later on. The three challenges that the country is faced with and the police is expected to work on them. Number one is terrorism and its most inhuman campaign of intimidation, because we are at war there. We are fighting every day to pull out a police force from a district for training purposes is increasingly difficult now. We have to continue to do that. Without going into details, what I'm trying to do is that, number one, rely on our asset, particularly from President Karzai, who said that he's giving us a blank check in terms of reform of the police. And support from the majority of the parliament, and continue with these programs. Now, international community does play a major role in it, and we welcome their positive role in the process. Second, on the Afghan Public Protection Force, the idea is that all the insecure, high threat areas will hopefully have this force. And we are starting with a pilot in Wardak province. And in Wardak province, at least there are 3 ethnic groups who will be participating in this. So it will not be confined just to the south. But all of us are looking forward to the result in Wardak so that it can be replicated elsewhere.
Mr. Ambassador.
Thank you, and thank you for your very kind comments about our times together. I wanted to come back to Vonda's question about the new community force, because there is so much skepticism in the international community and in the analysts. And I know you have answers, but I think it's important to get out some more detail here, because when we worked together on the auxiliary police, the concept was also Ministry of Interior control and not militias and vetting. And in the end, we failed. And so I'd like to ask you to go a little more into detail about how we don't, how you don't fail this time. I wish I could say we, but I'm out of the game.
To be very frank, the auxiliary police idea was met with quite a lot of skepticism right from the beginning. And I must self-criticize and say that the government of Afghanistan did not provide good leadership for that. There was nothing wrong with the idea. What was wrong was the implementation. This time, well, first, the Afghan Public Protection Force is different from the auxiliary police. People understood at that time that auxiliary police is basically ask a local strong man to create a force and then pay the force and provide the force with weapons and the resources it needs. This is fundamentally different with the Afghan Public Protection Force. There's no local strong man. It's the government of Afghanistan, it's Ministry of Interior in the police, and they will be accountable and responsible to the government. Second, we have built an interagency committee, which will be responsible for the oversight and will provide the right support to the Ministry of Interior to implement this. Among the different players is the U.S. Army under the leadership of General McKernan and UNAMA. UNAMA is also part of it. Ministry of Interior provides the leadership. Already we have done a kind of three-month preparatory work for this. The launch will take place pretty soon after we do a number of other things. It will be 100% transparency about it. We have also established a joint inspection team for it, that there will be international as well as Afghan inspectors. So every aspect of it is well thought through, and we have a significant commitment from the United States. But there's nothing ambassador in Afghanistan that will not meet first with a level of skepticism. The only way to overcome that is to demonstrate the result on the ground. I know, especially even with the these days, the darling of the international community, the National Solidarity Program, was hated at the beginning by most of our international partners. But when they saw the results, now today, both Afghans and the international community love it. Similarly, with the education community-based approach, there was quite a lot of skepticism at the beginning, but now they love it. So yes, a level of skepticism at the beginning is healthy, provided that that is not the enemy of the initiative. That level of skepticism should only produce better results in terms of transparency and accountability. So I'm pretty much optimistic that we will succeed in this. And then there will be lessons to learn from, especially the auxiliary police experience. Those lessons have already been incorporated in the strategy of the program.
We've got about 15 minutes left. I'm going to start taking two questions at a time, if I could.
5 minutes.
Oh, okay. Forgive me. Okay, we'll go with then Dan, and then the gentleman right across from him. Christine, Dan's on the right, standing there.
Mr. Minister, I want to focus a little bit of attention on the Ministry of Interior itself. In the Brookings material that's been handed to us, it says there are over 5,000 people working in Ministry of Interior headquarters. There are also a few hundred American advisors. My question is, what are you getting from those American advisors? And might you do well also to look to the Europeans, who after all have people who have worked in interior ministries, whereas the Americans, by definition, have never made a career in an interior ministry because we don't have any interior ministries. So what are you getting from the Americans, and would the Europeans have something to offer?
If you don't mind, I'll take the last question and then you can wrap up as you wish. This sir here, yes, please.
Actually, more or less the same question. There is, as far as I know, there is a big EUPOL mission in Afghanistan as well. So I want to ask what this mission is doing. I mean, Minister referred to CSTC Alpha efforts. Of course, they are doing well, but I also want to hear, if possible, what European Union police mission is doing. Thanks.
Is that enough, or shall we take one more? How do you feel?
The boss is the ambassador.
No, that's fine. No, if you answer, we'll take another one.
Okay, and then so we'll take them all together, if you don't mind, because you're taking notes. Right here in front. Yes, right there, please.
Thanks. Alex Thier from the U.S. Institute of Peace. It's a pleasure to see you and to have worked with you on and off over the last decade and a half now. I just wanted to ask a fundamental question, a debate that I think goes to really your first point about the role of the police in the counterinsurgency. Obviously, police have a critical role in dealing with criminality and so on. But one point that you didn't go into such detail of is what role do you envision for the police in the counterinsurgency? As you noted, the police are getting killed at a far higher rate than military forces, international or domestic. And part of that has to do with the poor training and equipping, but part of it has to do with the fact that police may not be the most appropriate ones to be the front line against the insurgency. And so I'm wondering whether you see an increased role for the police and how you respond to that by increasing the capabilities of the police, or whether you think that other institutions should be taking some of the role that the police are now bearing the brunt of.
There are 3,000 people working for the headquarters, sir, and I'm further reducing it and sending them to the provinces. What we get from the Americans is, number one, a good heart of partnership. Number two, at the moment, there are 25,000 policemen are being trained by the Americans. Already 24,000 have been trained over the past couple of years. And the training is a combination of counterinsurgency and community policing. Second thing that we get out of their efforts is the institutional reform of the systems. I'm not going to go into details, but that's the significant effort. Third, per annum, the investment in the Ministry of Interior and its police force is around $1.5 billion. And $1.2 billion is provided by the Americans. And that's salaries, food, weapons, and all sustainment costs. With the Europeans' colleagues, we haven't really got sufficient number of police trainers and mentors through the EUPOL yet. We've already asked them to do a labor division with our American partners and said uniformed police, border police will be built, reformed, trained, and sustained by the American colleagues. I've asked them to focus on anti-crimes police force, which is a smaller force, around 6,000 people, and at the moment, EUPOL is focusing on that. Second thing we requested them was with an anti-corruption strategy of the ministry that we've asked them to provide investigators. This is in a nutshell. There's now a labor division. There is, let me be honest with you on something. No foreign country can rebuild or develop another country unless leadership is provided by the recipient country. Now that leadership is there and it's producing results. Finally, on the issue of police role, to be honest, this debate cannot be solved at this point. There are terrorists, they are coming to villages, they live in sometimes in villages, and the first line of defense to protect our girls going to schools, our people, our teachers, health workers, and the communities at large is the police. Whether we like it or not, we will have to face the terrorists right there in the communities. So exactly for that reason, we proposed to both the government of Afghanistan and the international community and said, let's create the Afghan Public Protection Force, which will take care of the security, pure security. And the police, both under the same command, and the police to do the traditional roles of community policing, anti-crimes. So it works now, well, hopefully, as we establish the Afghan Public Protection Force, that you will have in Saidabad district, for instance, 300 people. 200 of them Afghan Public Protection Force, and 100 the police. So the Public Protection Force will secure Saidabad. The roads, the schools, the clinics, the communities, the villages. And the police will do the community policing there. So that's the kind of new approach that we have proposed, and it is receiving a serious consideration now, both from the government and, well, the government has agreed, the president has authorized the creation of this force. It's now for the international community to support it. This is not to say that the army is not needed there. The army is a strike force to do shape and clear. But once that is done, the police with its public protection force will have to hold the area and provide law enforcement.
Can you say please?
Ami Akhirisha. منظور ای است که ما در پهلوی پلیس باید یک قوت امنیتی را تحت اداره و قمانده پلیس ایجاد بکنیم که او قوت امنیتی امنیت محله بگیره تا پلیس بتانه نقش عنانوی خود که عبارت از تنفیذ قانون است او را ایفا بکنه. بنان برای ایجاد از این قوت ما پروگرام نوی را که محافظت آمسی را آغاز کردیم ای به هیچ وجه ملیشا و اربکه و امثال هم نیست. ای یک قوت رسمی دولت است تحت قمانده پلیس که وظیفش خاص بر امنیت است و پلیس وظیفش تنفیذ قانون، اما اردوش در عین ولسوالی در عین ولایت تحت عین قمانده کار خواهد کرد.
Please join me in thanking the minister for an excellent presentation.